This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. 10 U.S. Democratic presidential contenders debated Wednesday night in the first major event of the 2020 election campaign, all looking to oust Republican President Donald Trump after his first term in the White House. The immediate focus was on Senator Elizabeth Warren, a progressive lawmaker from the northeastern state of Massachusetts, who national surveys show has edged closer to former Vice President Joe Biden as a Democratic favorite to oppose Mr. Trump. And on the issue of health care,
there are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible. We just can't do it. It's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it. Well, health care is a basic human right.
Another senator, Cory Booker.
Health care is not just a human right. It should be an American right. And I believe the best way to get there is Medicare for all. But I have an urgency about this. When I am president of the United States, I'm not going to wait. We have to do the things immediately that are going to provide better care.
10 candidates debated Wednesday night, while 10 more debate Thursday night. The U.S. Senate on Wednesday approved a bill to provide aid that would aid in stemming illegal migration across the country's southern border with Mexico. AP's Tim McGuire.
The Senate overwhelmingly passed a $4.6 billion measure to cover the cost to shelter and feed migrants detained by the Border Patrol and care for unaccompanied migrant children who are turned over to the Department of Health and Human Services. Both agencies are struggling to care for the tens of thousands of people. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants some changes.
I think they are four changes to this bill. We could quickly have a conference, talk about those four changes, try to get them in the bill, and finish this.
Before leaving for the G20 summit in Japan, President Trump also said the funding is urgent. Both houses need to approve any changes ahead of next week's 4th of July recess. Tim McGuire, Washington.
And this is VOA News. According to a new report out Wednesday, the Islamic State terror group has set conditions for a comeback that could be faster and even more devastating than when it first burst onto the world stage. ISIS's second comeback, assessing the next ISIS insurgency by the Washington-based Institute for the Study of War, also warns the terror group, often referred to IS or ISIS, is likely to reclaim territory both in Syria and in Iraq, where it is already seizing control. U.S. President Donald Trump blasted former special counsel Robert Mueller, who agreed to provide open testimony before congressional committees next month. AP's Mike Rossia.
The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee says he expects next month's testimony from special counsel Robert Mueller will be profound. Mueller is scheduled to appear before the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees in rare back-to-back sessions on July 17th. Speaking to reporters on Capitol Hill, New York Democrat Gerald Nadler.
I think it's very important that the American people hear from Mr. Mueller as to what he did find, what the results of that two-year investigation were.
However, Mueller said last month the Russia report speaks for itself and he won't be providing any new information. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Iran's ambassador to the UN says that his country will exceed limits on low-enriched uranium set by the 2015 nuclear deal unless Britain, France, and Germany take practical steps to preserve the agreement. Majid Ravanchi told a Security Council meeting that the three European countries and the United States will have to accept responsibility if that deal fails.
In practical terms, the JCPOA has become an agreement which is being respected only by one party. A multilateral agreement cannot be implemented unilaterally.
And then the United States acting UN ambassador Jonathan Cohen says that Iran shouldn't be pointing the blame at others.
Responsibility for Iran's economic woes belongs to Tehran. Whether through gross economic mismanagement, corruption, or the redirection of its money for militaristic purposes around the region, Iran's own behavior has caused its economic decline.
Under the 2015 deal, Iran had agreed to limit its uranium enrichment and submit to UN inspections in exchange for a lifting of sanctions. President Trump pulled the United States out of the agreement last year and has imposed increasingly tough sanctions on Iran ever since. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington, and today is Thursday, June the 27th. Here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. Authorities in Madagascar say that at least 15 people were killed and 75 wounded in a stampede at a stadium after a military parade in the capital, Antananarivo. Red was to mark the country's Independence Day. In Libya, forces allied to the country's internationally recognized government seized the town of Garian, south of Tripoli. The town is home to the main supply base of eastern forces attacking the capital city. A Kenyan member of parliament is expected to appear in court today after his arrest for remarks inciting violence and xenophobia.
Those who are selling second-hand clothes in the city, in the markets in the city, those opportunities are being taken away by the citizens of neighboring countries. And therefore, the government has to get and help the Kenyans. Otherwise, he will only give the government of Kenya 24 hours, or otherwise he's going to use force.
That is Kennedy Wandera, a reporter in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. And the new report says that there is a gradual increase in acceptance of LGBTQ persons in Nigeria. And despite limited access to internet and restricted internet use, activists are saying that social media can help promote democracy in Africa.
It's become the primary space through which people get information, political information and news information, which shapes their political behavior.
As Kenyan writer and activist Nanjala Nyabola. We have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Madagascar, where authorities said that at least 15 people were killed and 75 others wounded in a stampede at a stadium after a military parade to mark the country's Independence Day in Madagascar's capital, Antananarivo. Defense Minister General Richard Rakotonirina said it was unclear what had caused the stampede, but some witnesses told Reuters that they had witnessed chaos as people were trying to push their way into the stadium through the only open door. A Kenyan member of parliament was arrested outside the Kenyan parliament yesterday after video peace. In the speech to his constituents working in a local market, Mr. Charles Njagua, a representative of Starehe, one of the counties in Nairobi, called on foreigners operating businesses in his country to close shop or they would be attacked and forced out of the country. The remarks caused an outcry in the wider Kenyan community, many distancing themselves from what was viewed as inciting xenophobia and violence targeting foreigners working in the country. The government of Tanzania summoned the Kenyan High Commissioner to explain the remarks, sparking a diplomatic row between the two member countries of the East African community. Mr. Njagua is expected to appear in court today, Thursday. And for more on this, I reached reporter Kennedy Wandera in Nairobi, Kenya. Wandera, what can you tell us about this member of parliament? What did he exactly say?
On Monday, the member of parliament said that Kenya government has a duty to ensure that its people have job opportunities, and this to mean that especially in the informal sector, its people, those who are selling second-hand clothes in the city, in the markets in the city, those opportunities are being taken away by the citizens of neighboring countries, and therefore the government has to get and help the Kenyans. Otherwise, he to only give the government of Kenya 24 hours, or otherwise he's going to use force to try to evict those nationals who are leaving Kenya. And he mentioned those leaving Kenya, such as nationals of Uganda and Tanzania.
Members of the East African community, basically, what is the number of Tanzanians and Ugandans who work in Kenya in those sectors?
It's not such big, because you will expect that a Kenyan, a Tanzanian, for instance, coming to Kenya, or a Ugandan coming to Kenya, doesn't require a visa or or is faced with a lot of restrictions on visa application. They just come in because they access the country using their national ID. But the challenge has been that they are feeling that the laws that Kenya has been using to deport other nationals such as Chinese who've been in the country and they've been engaging in such businesses that has resulted for the local people. He feels that it is right for Kenya to only ensure that there are enough job opportunities for its people, because if other nationals are coming in the country and they are taking opportunities that are reserved for the local people, then he believes it's not absolutely right, and therefore the Kenya government has to get in.
And so how much of what he said actually represents a genuine grievance among us Kenyans in his constituency?
Quite a number of Kenyans, especially in his constituency, because his constituency is made of a majority of the young people who feel like they are not having job opportunities in their country, and therefore the government needs to come in to ensure that there are job opportunities for the young people.
What has been the Kenyan government's response to these remarks by this member of parliament?
The chief administrative secretary and the minister of foreign affairs say that Kenya disassociates itself with such remarks and calls that remarks as very reckless. The government spokesperson Cyrus Oguna made a statement and said that Kenya is going to find ways on how it can summon the said member of parliament, and therefore what he said represents his personal view, not the vision, the view of the country.
Not an official position of the government. What has been the relationship, or what is generally the relationship between Kenyans and foreigners who work in the country?
Yeah, the relationship has been good, but I must admit that a few weeks ago, the government of Kenya has deported a number of Chinese who have been found in the country engaging in businesses that are reserved for the local people.
Mm.
And therefore, the government said that any national who comes in the country must always be able to follow the laid down guidelines that allows him or her to be in the country. And therefore, the government of Kenya cannot give special passes or give visa to people who are coming to the country to take up jobs that are meant for the locals.
That was Kennedy Wandera. He was speaking to me from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. And still in Kenya, where the United States Institute of Peace, in collaboration with the local NGO Sisters Without Borders, are fighting radicalization among women. Maureen Ojambo reports from the Kenya's capital, Nairobi, that this comes at a time when radicalization among young people is on the rise in the country.
Women have been found to be actively involved in terror groups as others join the militia and abused sexually by the Al-Shabaab and other terror groups globally. Speaking in Nairobi during the launch of Sisters Without Borders organization in Kenya, Kenya Special Envoy and Director National Counterterrorism Center Martin Kimani said that the organization is meant to protect women from being recruited to join the terror groups. He says most terror groups are driven by women.
Ideology, who are drawn towards that ideology. The work to do the same things we do to stop all other male terrorists. And many of these women, when they travel to Somalia especially, end up under suffering a great deal from sexual abuse. It turns out that Al-Shabaab basically uses his women as sex slaves.
Kenya has been fighting to ensure radicalization does not take place in areas like mosques, which have been the target for youths who have earlier joined the Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Mr. Kimani says security services are staged in each county to ensure radicalization does not take place.
Frustration of not having an income, of having a livelihood, the frustration of not having what other people have is leading a lot of young people to crime and to criminal organizations. Then we in the security services are hunting and looking for recruiters to put them behind bars where they belong. But radicalization continues to be a problem.
Program Officer, U.S. Institute of Peace, Nicoleta Barbara, said that the institute is going around the globe in attack-prone countries, including Syria and Iraq, to create awareness on terror recruits.
We're very proud supporters of this network of Kenyan women leaders called Sisters Without Borders. We've been working with sisters in Kenya since early 2014 to combat and prevent the threat of violent extremism. So sisters work in Nairobi, Mombasa, and Garissa, and we support them in their work through capacity building training and through helping facilitate dialogue, helping them facilitate dialogues at the local and national level.
Mostly attacked areas in Kenya, border Kenya and Somalia. Recently, a group of young girls were arrested trying to cross to Somalia to join the Al-Shabaab group. Mariam Hussein, Director Garissa Women for Peace, said that the network is meant to help women who have been affected after being recruited and left the camp, as well as those who are vulnerable. She says it's very difficult to deal with ladies since most of them are Al-Shabaab allies.
So I'm in a support group for women and for girls who have been affected either directly or indirectly, whose husbands have disappeared either through extrajudicial killing or Al-Shabaab taking them or having joined the Al-Shabaab, but they cannot come out and talk. You don't know whom you're talking to. One, because these people are people whom there are a lot of people who are sympathetic.
The U.S. ambassador to Kenya, Kyle McCutter, who was in attendance, said that the U.S. government is committed to support other countries across to fight terrorism. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. This is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us. Forces allied to Libya's internationally recognized government have captured the town of Garian in the south of the capital, Tripoli. Garian is the home to the main supply base of rebel forces attacking the capital. The takeover of Garian by Tripoli forces is a major blow to the eastern-based Libya National Army, LNA, led by Khalifa Haftar, which in April this year started an offensive to take Tripoli from the internationally recognized administration. The offensive has not advanced beyond Tripoli's southern suburbs, and the front line had not changed significantly for weeks. Forces allied to the Tripoli government, backed by air forces, stormed the town some 90 kilometers south of Tripoli in what witnesses say was a morning surprise attack. A new report by the Initiative for Equal Rights, a Nigeria-based nonprofit working to promote the human rights of sexual minorities, shows that there is a gradual increase in acceptance of LGBTQ persons in Nigeria. According to the results from the TIA's Social Perception Survey on Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights in Nigeria, 60% of Nigerians say they will not accept a family member who is LGBT, compared to the 83% in 2017. The difference from the two surveys suggests that homophobia might be on a downward trend in Africa's most populous nation. From Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos, Samuel Okocha reports on the possible reason behind the seeming change in attitude and what some residents of the city are saying on this issue.
In 2014, Nigeria passed a law which banned homosexuality and same-sex marriage. The Federal Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act says anyone found guilty of homosexuality faces up to 14 years in jail. The law echoes the deep homophobia that runs deep in Nigeria. In 2015, a survey by the Initiative for Equal Rights, a Nigerian-based human rights organization, showed 90% of Nigerians support the continued enforcement of Nigeria's anti-gay laws. But in June this year, the same survey showed about 75% now support it, an indication homophobia may be on its way down.
The survey is a snapshot of what Nigerians are thinking, especially younger Nigerians who are exposed to more information and education surrounding fundamental human rights and the fact that human rights do not belong to only a group of people. It belongs to everyone who is human being according to the Constitution.
Omolara Oriye is the Human Rights Director at the Initiative for Equal Rights. Authors of the survey, with results showing a gradual acceptance of LGBT persons in Nigeria. She thinks the exposure of younger people to relevant information is helping to improve perceptions of LGBT persons in the country.
Just a better exposure to education and information surrounding, you know, things that concern human beings and their diversity. I think that the world will evolve and people will begin to understand better the fact that human beings are inherently different. And this is shown in every part of our lives.
Meanwhile, some residents of Lagos spoke on their feelings towards LGBT persons.
It's an abomination. God did not create us like that.
For me, I wouldn't take it from a family member, not even to talk of a friend or associate. If I discover you are such a person, then a permanent barrier will be in our relationship.
Personally, it's unacceptable. Very unacceptable.
Personally, I see nothing wrong with anybody's sexuality. It's not a crime. That they didn't come to kill someone or rob someone or to take a government's property. There are criminals out there for government to chase.
Gays and lesbians in Africa's most populous country are at greater risk of contracting HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases because of discrimination, which makes it difficult to seek counseling and treatment. The prohibition of same-sex unions means members of Nigeria's LGBT community will continue to hide their sexual orientation to avoid discrimination and punishment. Samuel Okocha, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samuel. And we stay in West Africa, where Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission is calling for the arrest of Yakuba Toure, a former council member of the military junta. This followed Mr. Toure's refusal to testify before the commission after being implicated in the murder of Gambia's former finance minister Osman Koro Sise and other human rights violations. Reporter Panderimbai has more on this story.
Drama unfolded at the TRRC on Wednesday. Former junta council member and local government minister Yakuba Toure refused to be sworn in. He also said he will not give evidence on oath. He had to walk away from the commission on two different occasions. He was later asked for the second time to consider testifying before he could agree to formally appear before the TRRC. Toure later agreed to be sworn in, though during questions and answer session, Toure wouldn't answer questions fired to him by the lead counsel Esa Fall regarding the events that occurred in July of 1994. He invoked what he calls constitutional immunity to justify his refusal not to testify.
I am not going to testify regarding that, please. I invoke my constitutional immunity on all those issues.
Mr. Toure, I warn you that this is not the place to raise the issue of immunity. If you want to raise immunity claim, you take it to the High Court.
Lead counsel Fall reminded Toure that the TRRC is not a court of law. He also says Toure's claim for immunity doesn't apply in this matter. He says the TRRC is a fact-finding institution. But notwithstanding, Toure remained adamant on his position that he will not testify.
Counsel, I still stand by my position that I invoke the constitutional immunity. The constitution is the supreme law of this country. Any proceeding that is against the 1997 constitution, I am not going to testify and I will not answer any questions.
Counsel Esa Fall again.
I will not enter into a legal debate with you as to whether immunity applies here or not. I would proceed to ask my questions and would remind you that it is an offense under the laws of the commission, under the TRRC Act, for failing to answer questions by the commission.
Toure, in response, said he was willing to appear before the TRRC, but he maintains that he reserved the right not to testify. He repeatedly invoked the constitution to justify his refusal not to give evidence.
The issue of testimony before this commission is out, and I do not recognize the legitimacy of this commission when I have constitutional immunity. I am not going to continue further. You may also use all your legal tools, and then we will proceed and see.
Toure has been implicated in the murder of Gambia's former finance minister Osman Koro Sise. One of the confessed killers of Sise, Alhaji Kani, says the former minister was killed at Mr. Toure's home back in June of 1995. Toure has also been implicated in the torture of UDP opposition supporters back in 1996. Dr. Lamin Sise is the chairman of Gambia's TRRC. Sise says Toure's refusal to testify violates the law.
In the light of this, the commission has to act firmly and within the parameters of the law to ensure that actions of this nature are dealt with the full force of law. I therefore have no choice but to order the immediate arrest of Mr. Yakuba Toure pursuant to sections 15(1)(h) and 15(2)(b) of the TRRC Act 2017.
Ture was subsequently arrested and remanded in prison. The TRRC lead counsel, El Safar, later held a press conference where he talked about what he calls Ture's contempt towards the commission. Some people were said to have threatened to attack Ture, but Fall has appealed to citizens not to take the law into their own hands. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
Then from Gambia, we go to East Africa, and this time in Uganda, where a report says that despite limited access to internet and restricted internet use, activists are saying that social media can help promote democracy in Africa. They say that young people who are the majority across the continent can always use internet platforms to connect with each other and share political ideas in their respective countries. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
Nanjala Nyambola, a political analyst, writer, and a maintainer advocate, says social media helps people across different political divide to discuss issues that affect their lives. She says in countries where there are limited media freedoms, internet becomes the main platform for citizens to express themselves.
Especially when you talk about young populations who are the majority of people who are using social media platforms, it's become the primary space through which people get information, political information and news information, which shapes their political behavior. And so then it becomes the real, a real battleground of ideas. And that's really what you want in an active democracy. You want people to be able to exchange ideas, political ideas, information and things like that.
Michael Katagaya, the head of Evidence and Methods Lab, a civic initiative that promotes access to information and accountability in Uganda, agrees. Katagaya says politicians can use internet to convey their messages.
We have a population that is less informed in terms of politics, in terms of social issues, and in terms of actions that they can take. For example, we have many citizens who do not believe that they can change a government using their vote, that they have the power to be able to cause that change.
Evidence and Methods Lab simplifies important documents such as laws, budgets and reports and shares them on internet for citizens to read. Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson for People Power, an opposition political pressure group in Uganda, says unfortunately, internet is highly regulated in the country. But he says internet is the easier way for the opposition to spread their messages across the country.
We are encouraging people to keep getting on social media and have serious discussions, hold their leaders accountable, because you see, you're not going to find these leaders in their offices, in their homes or wherever else, but you can target them on social media and hold them accountable.
Ofwono Opondo, Uganda government spokesperson, denies his government restricts the use of internet. In fact, he says the government is working towards improving internet infrastructure.
There is a program to roll out that all the local governments, if you want to do business with a government entity, you have to go online. That is going to help us to reduce the physical interface between the government servers and business people, which was helping spread corruption. Employment in the government today, now people apply online, they get the interview, the first line of interview, the first two lines of interview online.
Last year, Uganda government introduced a tax on social media users. The government claimed the tax, which has resulted in two reduced users of internet, was meant to increase revenues for the government treasury. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
And that's it for this Thursday, June the 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.